This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, filling in for Terry Gross. The 332nd Fighter Group was the first squadron of African-American fighter pilots in the United States Air Force. During World War II, they fought two enemies, the Germans and racial prejudice. These pilots, known as the Tuskegee Airmen, flew over 200 missions escorting heavy bombers into Germany. They never lost a plane to the enemy, and they shot down some 400 German aircraft. This Saturday, HBO premieres a feature film about the Tuskegee Airmen, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Andre Brower, and Malcolm Jamal Warner. Robert Williams is the co-executive producer and also co-wrote the screenplay. He was one of the Tuskegee Airmen. Williams grew up in a fairly well-integrated town in Iowa and was taught to fly a plane by his father. He tried to enlist soon after Pearl Harbor, but was turned away. When the Air Force decided to accept black pilot trainees, he took a train from his hometown to Tuskegee, Alabama. He told Terry that that trip was the first time he encountered raw racism.
When I got to Evansville, Indiana, that was the line of demarcation between sanity and insanity, better known as the Mason-Dixon line. Once you cross that line, there were no more integrating of the races. So they forced me and every other black person who was on that integrated train to get off and get in the Jim Crow car, which was closer to the engine, and the smoke and soot from the engine would make the seats dirty and a very unpleasant ride. And so that was the Jim Crow car. And as I got off and the other blacks, we saw them usher in this contingent of German prisoners of war into the same car that we were forced to get out of. In other words, the enemy, our national enemy, was more welcome in that car and with others, more welcome than we were. And that was still quite a smack in the face.
What was the attitude of white officers in the training program at Tuskegee when you got there?
It all related to where they came from. If they were Southerners with bigoted attitudes, they displayed them openly. If they were Northern educated people, by and large, they were civil. That's not universal. There were some whites from the North who were just as bigoted as some from the South. But you could almost always count on the ones from the South as being very, very hostile.
There's a scene in the movie, The Tuskegee Airmen, where the Lawrence Fishburne character is flying a plane as part of his training, but he has to make an emergency landing, and he lands in a field in Alabama where, coincidentally, a chain gang, a prison chain gang, is at work. Did that happen to you?
It did.
Tell me about that, and tell me about the reaction of the men in the chain gang when they saw that you, an African American, was the pilot of this army plane.
I should mention that
these were African American convicts in the chain gang.
That's true. That's very true. We were on our final navigational exercise. These chain gang people had probably seen white pilots many, many times land and take off from that field. But as we landed, we removed our goggles and our oxygen mask, which revealed our brown faces. And as we taxied back to takeoff position, one of these young black fellows looked up and saw my black face, and he screamed as though he had seen God. He said, "My God, these colored boys!" And the others looked up, and they screamed, too. And it was the most heartrending thing I've ever experienced in my life. We had to wait a few moments before we took off to clear the tears from our eyes. It was so impactful. It was not unlike the feeling we all had about Joe Louis when he would win a fight. We hungered for heroes, and I guess we were heroes to those blacks on that chain gang. And it was the first time that we ever felt that what we were doing had some significance. We were just young kids who wanted to fly because it was glamorous and exciting and a safer place to be in the war. But when those people reacted in that manner, it was very, very revealing to us that somehow this was kind of special. But even so, we still never thought of it in a historical context. We didn't realize that we were making history.
The Tuskegee Airmen flew missions during the war, protecting American bombers. And you never lost a bomber. Were there ever white bombers who objected to having African-American escorts?
Oh, strenuously, initially. They succumbed to the stereotypical perception of who and what black people were, and they refused, I guess, to accept the fact that we were professional and courageous, just like anybody else, and maybe even more so. And they really resisted and really did not like the idea of blacks protecting them. I'll give you an example of how that happened, or a facet of what happened one day. I was leading the entire group. We normally fly 64 planes. It's four squadrons with 16 planes each, and if nobody aborts, has engine trouble and has to go back to the base, we normally have 64 planes. So I had 63 planes strung out behind me, and I was on a collision course with a group of bombers that we were going up to protect. So I decided to go under them, and I switched to their channel to tell them that I was going under so that they would know what my decision was. And as I switched my channel, I heard somebody say, "Ooh-wee, look at them, jigaboos go." They knew that we were the all-black group because of the red tails on our P-51s. And I was so incensed that I pressed the button on my microphone and I said, "These jigaboos just may save your bigoted ass someday, you cracker bastard." I was so angry. Here we are up there offering our lives to protect them. They are talking about us in that manner. It was very, very insulting to us. Ultimately, however, they recognized very shortly that whenever we flew with them, they didn't lose any bombers. And so later, it didn't take much time for them to recognize that we were not only courageous, but we were also very professional. And they started to ask for us, "I think you better make that beg for us to fly cover for them," because they knew that we would not run off and look for victories and leave them to the mercies of the German fighters who would cut them to pieces.
Did you ever feel, well, you know, the heck with them? You know, I wish I could turn around and leave them to their own fate. I mean, what stops you from being so angry that you could, you know, barely function?
It was our job. Our commanding officer, Benjamin O. Davis, who endured 4 years of the silent treatment at West Point simply because he had the wrong paint job, if he could endure that kind of insanity, you know, a lesser man would have quit, and a lesser man than that might have committed suicide. He endured it, and he insisted that we stay with those bombers. His message was, those guys have to go through enough hell flying through the flak being the 88-millimeter shells that come up to your altitude and explode and throw shrapnel all over the place, and it knocks out people, knocks wings off bombers, and the shrapnel goes through planes and kills people. He said they have to go through enough hell flying through that flak to over that target area. The least we can do is protect them going into that area and coming out of that area, and I will not tolerate anybody leaving the bombers. And we didn't. We never left them to the mercies of the German fighters.
Your commanding officer was Benjamin Davis, who was the first African-American graduate of West Point.
Modern day, yes.
Did he ever let on how much he'd been through when he was in West Point or thereafter? My impression is commanding officers don't share a whole lot about their personal reactions to things, but this seems like a pretty exceptional situation. How much did he tell you about what he'd been through?
He was very close-mouthed about it, at least to the most of us, and he never complained about it. He didn't complain about it while he was there, and he didn't complain about it after it happened. He had his eye on the prize, too, to graduate. He graduated in the top of his class and went on to become an outstanding general. He became the first three-star general in the history, black three-star general in the history of the military. His father before him was the first black general in the military. So he had something to live up to, and he did.
Terry Gross talking with Robert Williams. He was with the 332nd Fighter Group in World War II. He's co-produced a new HBO film about the Tuskegee Airmen. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Robert Williams.
Now, I believe you flew 50 missions.
Correct.
Shot down two German planes.
Correct.
And got a Distinguished Flying Cross.
Correct.
I'd like you to describe what it was like to be up in the air in one of those planes during World War II?
Well, I got to tell you, in viewing this film, I look at it today and shudder. I said, I did that? My God, it's incredible. But at the time, you don't even think about it. I guess that's why the military wants young people. You don't have sense enough to be frightened, you know? I remember I was telling our director, our marvelous director, Bob Markowitz, I said, he asked me what was the most fearful time I ever experienced over there. And I told him that the most fearful time I can recall was sitting on the end of the runway one morning when there was a blizzard. And the bombers went, so we had to go. We had to go provide top cover and protection for them. But as the plane in front of me took off, he'd get a quarter of a way down the runway and disappear in this snow. And I sat there wondering, how in the hell am I going to find him to fly formation with him? We're taking off toward the mountains. If I can't see him a quarter of the way down the runway, how in the world am I going to see anything else out there? And I said, if I come back and it's still snowing like this, where am I going to land? I knew I was going to die that day. And I sat at the end of that runway with tears running down my eyes. But I pushed the throttle forward and took off like the rest of the guys did. And, I'm sorry, but I'm breaking up a little here. A little emotional.
What saved you that day?
Well, you do what you're trained to do. The man says go, you go. And once we got a little altitude, we got past the snow, and the field was clear, and we were able to land. But nobody knew that when you took off. You just hope for the best, and that's fortunately the best turned out to be what happened.
What was it like to be up in a plane, being under fire, and being in a plane that, boy, by today's standards, are so technically unreliable? They seem primitive by today's standards. They seem like little motorcycles.
That's true, but our competition was less of a quality machine than ours. We had the best there was in World War II, and we were very proud of the P-51 Mustang. It was a marvelous airplane. It's marvelous today, but by today's standards, in terms of speed and firepower, it is kind of archaic, but... In those days, it was the best. It was a state of the art.
You had to wear an oxygen mask in order to breathe at the altitude.
Right.
You needed goggles.
Yes.
It was cold, I imagine.
In the winter, it's beastly cold. You lose 2 degrees every 1,000 feet. So if it's zero when you leave the ground, or if it's, let's say for practical purposes, it's zero when you leave the ground. Every 1,000 feet you gain in altitude, you lose two degrees of temperature. So if you get to 20,000 feet, it's 40 below zero. So, yes, it gets quite cold.
Were there times when you were in the air and had to watch as a friend of yours was shot down?
Oh, yes. I can't tell you how heartrending that is and how hopeless you are. You can't help him. He's hit and you know he's going to die. And if he's a close friend, it just tears your heart out. I've seen people who were in bombers that were a bullet or one of those heavy shells, 88-millimeter shells, would hit the wing of a bomber, for instance, and it would crumble like a wounded goose and tumble out of the sky like a wounded goose, cartwheeling and twisting in all kinds of manner. And you know full well that there's no way that anybody in that plane is going to get out because it's twisting so violently. And you know that everyone in there is going to die. I don't know how many people comprised a crew, but you know whoever, however many there are, 10 or 5, 10, 12, whatever there is, they're all dead. And you just feel so helpless. You can't help those people at all. And that tears your heart out, and you don't even know them. So it's magnified many times when it is someone you knew and love.
When you got home from the war, did you feel that your accomplishments flying planes was recognized.
No, I don't. Recognized by the black press and the black public, but we still did not get any credit from the white press and from the military. However, ultimately, President Harry Truman, bless his soul, when he signed the executive order integrating all of the military, he made the observation that he did so because of the outstanding and courageous work of the 332nd Fighter Group. Colin Powell, who is, was a top general in the military, made the observation that his promotion ascendancy to the status that he was in was accelerated by the outstanding work of the 332nd Fighter Group. The astronauts, the black astronauts, make that same observation many, many times. So now we are more or less getting the recognition that we thought we had earned years ago and was denied to us years ago.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I thank you for your interest in the project and in the picture, and thank you so much for your time.
Robert Williams is the co-producer of a new feature film about the Tuskegee Airmen. It premieres this Saturday on HBO.